Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Spanning the nerd world and feeding your fandom. It's time for the Down and Nerdy Podcast. Here's your host, James Witham.
Live from San Diego, it's episode 479 of the Down and Nerdy Podcast. I'm James Witham. I'm not going to be talking too loud because I'm trying to be courteous to my hotel neighbors as I record this from San Diego. Yep, it's Comic-Con 2023, and we thought maybe this year might be different. And usually I would kind of launch right into, you know, what the show is going to be about and stuff like that. But what I want to do to start this off, and I think I did this last year too, was I just want to talk about the vibe here at Comic-Con in general, kind of just start things off a little bit. And you might have listened to me kind of make a couple predictions about what this year's con would be like. And I thought more people would be inside the show floor than there were last year. And I will tell you, that was a big yes up to this point, just for Wednesday and Thursday. When I finally got inside the show floor right when it opened on Wednesday, which is supposed to be preview night, by the way. I want you to keep that in mind, preview night. So the floor was absolutely packed. Probably more people I've ever seen in there on a preview night before. And the interesting thing was that a friend of mine was with me, went right to the DC booth because DC's finally back on the show floor after skipping last year's show. So wanted to see what the DC booth was going to look like, the smaller DC booth. And we noticed as we were walking, and even once we got to DC, that a lot of the lines for merchandise, things like that, were already capped. And we'd only been inside for 5, maybe 10 minutes at most. So that was really surprising. And sometimes that happens, even during Wednesdays of the convention, the lines will be capped right away, but it usually takes about, you know, at least 30 minutes, if not an hour, for a lot of lines to be capped. So it was very interesting that right when the doors open, the lines were capped. And it's not like they let people in early. They don't do that at Comic-Con. I can tell you that right now. If you've never been and thought, well, maybe some people got in early. No, that's not a thing. I can promise you that right now. They don't let people in early. The only people that go in early are exhibitors and certain other people. It wouldn't be in line in the first place. So you can get that idea out of your head right now. But it was just, and then I went down to the Funko section where Funkoville is, which is amazing again this year. And it's just wall to wall, like shoulder to shoulder people. And even when I was walking through the floor on Thursday to do a couple of things, it was just, again, just so packed, so much more so than I would have expected. And I'm not going to say that it's the most packed that I've ever seen it, because I think that that's a little heavy handed, because There's certainly been years in years past where the show floor has had some massive booths and some really good activations on the inside of the con. So I will say it's not maybe the most I've seen it packed, but definitely, definitely more packed than it was last year on the inside. Part of that has to do with the heat. It's a little hotter in San Diego right now than it usually is. So that is part of it. So I'll throw that out there too, but just, I think it's the lack of, you know, Hall H presence and other things like that that was kind of the key to that happening this year. And speaking of Hall H, I was talking to a couple of people that basically said they were inside Hall H in 45 minutes. Now, for which panel that was for, they didn't tell me that. But I will say that it was surprising to me that it seemed like people were getting into Hall H a lot easier this year than in years past. Now, there were still people camped out on Wednesday, I will tell you that. There were still people waiting there for Turtles, which I understand. I get it. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, a big fandom. You want to be at the panel, whether the actors are there or not. That is commitment to fandom, and I do love that. But it also seemed like people were getting in if they wanted to get in. And in years past, that just wasn't a thing. I can promise you that right now. Now, are there other people that are going to camp out for other stuff? Sure. But I will say for certain, the Hall H line was not even close to as long as it usually is. Now, that probably has to do with the number of panels that are in Hall H. It's a very minimal size of panels in Hall H this year. That's certainly part of it. I will admit that fully. But at the same time, I'm going to tell you right now, it was weird not seeing that line wrapped all the way down the back of the convention center up to the Hilton Bayfront, which is right near the convention center. It was very strange not seeing that line as big as it usually is. It was so short at one point, I actually thought about jumping in it just for the heck of it, just to go into Hall H, because I've never actually been inside Hall H, and I considered it just to see what it would be like inside. But I had a lot of stuff to do, and you'll find that out in this week's show. I'm going to talk to Lily Bermejo, who is the artist and illustrator on A Vicious Circle from Boom Studios, but you know him from so many other amazing books. And I can't wait to tell you about this one, because this has a unique art style you really need to know about on top of being an amazing story. I also decided it was a good time to bring Liz Da Silva and Derek Baca back on the show to talk about Loungefly. I got a chance to stop by the Loungefly booth. Go to @downandnerdy757 on Instagram to check out those photos. A whole bunch of photos and videos from the con as well are available on there. Videos on TikTok @downandnerdypod as well. Speaking of the Funkoville, I also went to Mondo, not just to see those amazing 6-scale figures, I promise. I was there to talk to Senior Creative Director of Toys and Collectibles, Hector RC, and also Peter Santamaria, who is the guru for the posters and collectibles. So I got to chat with them about all the fun Mondo stuff that's happening at Comic-Con this year and so much other great stuff that I'm going to have on the show this week. So let's kick it off with an interview, shall we? Lee Bermejo, artist extraordinaire, is going to join me next on the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
This is writer Stephanie Phillips, and you're listening to the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
At Comic-Con 2023, and one of the things I love is so many great books that are at Comic-Con this year. And if you haven't read A Vicious Circle yet from Boom Studios, what are you doing? Because you need to get on this book. And this guy has been killing it. The second issue just dropped here at Comic-Con, Lee Bermejo. Lee, I mean, my jaw's still on the floor. I'm still picking it up from the first issue. Then you dropped the second issue. What's the fan response been like for you?
It just came out. We're still kind of gauging the second issue. But so far, it's good. We've gotten some pretty great reviews, which is always nice, you know? Yeah, people seem to really embrace the first issue, you know? It's tough. You do a creator-owned thing, new characters, new high concept. And you know how it is. In comics, it's the world of Batman and Spider-Man. So when you're introducing something new to the world, it can sometimes take some time to kind of get people on board the train. But we're getting there.
No doubt. I've been a fan of your art style from the beginning as it is. But what you're doing in this book, changing up your art style for these different time periods. I don't want to spoil too much for anybody that may not have read it, but talk about that as you go to each different time period, switching up your art style. How difficult is something like that for you?
You know, it just depends on the sequence and the style. Some of them have been surprisingly easy, and others kind of painful and difficult. You know, it just really depends. I was really cavalier at the beginning of the project, just talking about it with Mattson, with my writer co-creator. And I think that I had this idea that it would be a great way for me to be able to do kind of homages to my favorite artists and play around with comics in a way I never really did. What I didn't foresee is that I can only do so much, you know, I can only push the style so far. There will eventually be things that are just me, you know, and as much as I would love to be able to do, you know, by a Frank Fazetta style or something, I just can't do it, you know. So each style change has been a bit of a compromise between what I wanted to do and what actually comes out, you know, on the page. But I think it gives the book kind of a, we wanted to have something that was a emotional response that the characters were feeling, obviously being, you know, catapulted through time and not knowing where they were going. And so hopefully the style changes don't take people out of the story. Hopefully they actually immerse them more in the story, because they kind of are experiencing it with the characters. Like, what is this? It's new. It's different, you know? Like, the characters are experiencing that moment. So there is, like, a method, story, narrative reason for the madness. But, yeah, you know, it's been fun to do.
Oh, I can imagine. Talk about this dynamic between your two main characters. So you've got Sean, you've got Ferris. You're kind of feeling them both out, even in these first couple of issues. What is that? How would you describe the dynamic between the two of them? Because it doesn't seem like a typical, like a hero-villain type dynamic.
Yeah, I think the first issue was definitely the introductory, let's get to know the high concept and let's teach people how to read this book, you know. The second book, you definitely learn a lot more about Sean. And Thacker's world, we see where he comes from. We find out, I don't want to spoil too much or anything, but you know, we started the story in the first issue in the middle of the story, so we kind of find out how we got to that point in 1960s New Orleans. And then the third book will be Ferris's book. You know, so then we'll learn a lot more about Ferris, because we really haven't answered that many Ferris questions yet. And that's coming in the third book. And so the dynamic definitely between the two changes. You know, you start out with Ferris, like, he's the monster in the basement, right? He's kind of the bad guy. And as the book progresses, you're going to start to rediscover both of those characters in ways you hadn't maybe predicted.
Excellent. So you're going through these, there's, like you said, there's timeline changes in this book. I don't think that's much of a spoiler.
Yeah.
And we know how, you know, in other stories that we've seen, how much, you know, you change one little thing about the timeline and that can certainly throw things off. Are we going to see maybe some of that play out in this story a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. You start to see it in book two majorly. The effects that things that happen do have a bit of a ripple effect, you know? And the big question is really, how much of an effect do these things really have? And at the end of the day, I think that also will be, a lot of that will be the third book. Will be these two characters kind of philosophically getting into what this thing is really that they can do, you know, going through time. Whereas the first issue is, they're just reacting to it, you know. The second issue is a little bit more about their discovery of it. And so, you know, again, the third book will go into more about, okay, you know, what does it all mean? You know, what does all this time travel actually mean? So yeah, I don't know if that answers the question, but
no, it did.
Okay.
Because I know what you know about issue two, and I don't want to spoil it either.
Yeah, so. Yeah. No, I'm trying to dance around some of that stuff.
No doubt about that. No doubt. So, talk about the collaborative process, because, you know, obviously when you're creating a book together, writer, artist, there's a very much a collaboration there. So what went into, say, the character designs, what time periods you were going to choose to visit and things like that between the two of you?
I mean, Mattson had this amazing high concept, like that, you know, I remember when he pitched me that high concept, I immediately just thought, oh, this is, the possibilities are really crazy. And so we definitely have plotted this thing out, and Mattson has structured it in a way from the very beginning that, you know, what you're going to see through the end of the book was very much, that was the plan. And really, I think Mattson is such a visual storyteller because he's a filmmaker too, so I think he has such a good grasp of visual pacing that I can feel his influence on this book more in that, in the pacing rhythm of the story. But otherwise, you know, design stuff, we definitely talked about it all. We discussed about what would Sean Thacker's world look like, you know, when we finally see kind of where he comes from, and what about Ferris, and yeah, all that stuff was, they were subject of major conversations. And Mattson, I remember, even created like a visual, like Google Docs or something, you know, with a bunch of just, you know, still frames for movies that maybe were inspirational, and he would start to kind of filter that stuff to me, and then this thing, you know, eventually you take all that stuff and you funnel it, and it takes on a life of its own. But that, yeah, all conversations. This is it's been a very collaborative book in that sense. Yeah, we, you know, it's been a really great experience to work with a storyteller. I think is kind of good at the big picture, you know, but still keeping things very emotional and kind of intimate in another way.
you got some really difficult and emotional scenes that you have to draw, especially in this first issue. There's one that I'll probably never be able to get out of my head because it was just such a shocker and such an emotional thing. And I don't know that I really want to spoil it, but as an artist, when you on the page, you know, I have to present this very difficult moment. How do you kind of prepare yourself to be able to illustrate something like that? Because I got to imagine it's got to be difficult.
Part of that's just the story, you know, like that this the quality of the script. And the other thing I think about the, you know, specifically like the stuff that happened in issue one, you know, with Sean and his family and those moments. Part of that choice of style that I did with black and white is because I wanted that sequence to really play out the way we eventually had it play out, where, you know, you're pulling in further and further and further, and things are, you know, you're getting the heartbeat monitor effect,
which
everything.
Was incredible, man. That was that was amazing.
Thank you. They were just good, you know. It was just good writing, and I felt like I knew how to kind of present it, pulling in further and further and closer and closer and closer to the characters. So that moment, hopefully, really sold it, you know.
And you definitely did. Now, your covers, Lee, are already good enough as it is, but I want you to talk about some of the artists that you all were able to bring on for some of these variants, which are very cool, and you got some cool big names on the list.
Yeah, no, it's been awesome. I mean, it's been great to also be able to bring in someone like Helena Marsalis, who is not a really well-known comic artist. She's young and up-and-coming and really talented, and so part of it's been great to see someone like Louis LaRosa, who I'm a huge fan of Louis LaRosa's stuff. Getting him to do the cover for this was a big get for me, just because I'm such a fan, and he knows dinosaurs like nobody else. I mean, he's scientific about it. He's obsessed with dinosaurs in the best way. And I thought, if we can get him to do a dinosaur cover for us, that's amazing. We got lucky, you know. We got him, and Alex Garner did an incredible piece, and it's been great to see this you know, these variants kind of come together.
So I've talked to so many artists over the years that tell me that horses are a huge pain to draw. So I need to know which is the more difficult thing or the bigger pain. Is it horses or is it dinosaurs?
I mean, I went to Lewis before we even knew we could get him on a cover, because he just is so knowledgeable. I went to Lewis and I just asked him, I've never drawn dinosaurs before. What advice can you give me? You know, what are good reference material to look for that's kind of the real deal and not just, you know, Jurassic Park or something like that?
Yeah.
What he wound up providing me with was multiple emails packed with images and packed with bone structures of, you know, dinosaurs and muscle structures. He, some of them done by him, you know, where he would literally break down an Allosaurus and its muscle structure.
Wow.
Which, you know, he's a genius. Yeah, that really helped. So I can do horses okay. Dinosaurs, I was scared. Really scared. I've never done anything like that before. I'd say dinosaurs, because it's easy to find reference of horses, you know.
Sure, of course, yeah.
There's dinosaurs. You've got movies made about dinosaurs, but really all you have, and this is what I found to be the most helpful, was bones. You know, like seeing the skeletons of these dinosaurs. That was more helpful than anything else, because you can kind of use that as, okay, well, it has to have this structure, you know. I have to follow these rules.
So, before I let you go, Lee, we've got two issues that are out right now. What excites you the most about what's coming? What's the best tease that you can give for people that are already reading this book and are wondering where the story might be
headed? I'm really excited for people to learn more about Ferris. I'm really excited for that to be kind of coming to focus, because we haven't scratched the surface of that character yet. And the third issue really gets into it and really Ferris kind of takes center stage, and I've been waiting for this moment, like, since the beginning, because, you know, you're seeing this, who is this crazy guy with circle scars all over his body, and, you know, why is that, where does he come from, who is this guy, and I'm really excited for people to kind of finally get those answers and see how it affects their view of him and the story. So that's probably what I'm the most excited to do. Yeah.
And you guys will have to catch up. If you're not already, read issues 1 and 2 of A Vicious Circle from Boom Studios. You get those, and then make sure you just put it in your pull box at your local comic book shop. Then that way you won't have to worry about missing any issues. And what this guy's going to, if this book doesn't win him an Eisner, I don't know why we even have the Eisners, because it's that incredible. Lee Bermejo, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks very much.
I really do mean it. If this guy doesn't win an Eisner for this book, I don't know what we're doing here, because the way he shifts his art styles like that, to me, it's absolutely incredible. And when you read A Vicious Circle, you're not just going to get a great story, but you're going to get art that's going to blow your mind in so many different forms and really literally transform the story for you as you go. This is a unique book, a unique story. You cannot miss A Vicious Circle. First 2 issues right now are out from Boom Studios. Get it at your local comic book shop. Get it digitally. Just get it, because you definitely won't be sorry that you did. Again, thanks to Lee Bermejo and the wonderful people at Boom Studios for allowing me to do this interview during Comic-Con this year. Up next, I want to talk about some of the activations that I got to be a part of at Comic-Con, and I'll do that next on the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
This is David Sobolov, and you're listening to the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
One of my favorite things about Comic-Con is the activations that they have. Stuff that's happening outside of the con that just kind of immerses you in something. So I spent part of Wednesday and part of Thursday as well going through some of the press previews for these activations, and I want to kind of do this in order of how I did them. And the first stop I had was at the lodge from Paramount Plus, which actually looked like a ski lodge up front, which was really cool. And it was Paramount Plus promoting a lot of the stuff that they have out, like SpongeBob SquarePants activation where you could take your picture behind the cash register of the Krusty Krab. They also had the special op show that they've got coming out next week. That was a part of things as well. And there was a spot for Yellow Jackets. I will say this though, and I'm gonna maybe spoil a little bit of this stuff, but not a ton, because it's, you know, Comic-Con's still going on. Maybe you're hearing this and you want to go out there and check it out. The Yellow Jackets activation, I stood there for a good 5 minutes trying to figure out what I was supposed to see. I'm gonna be honest with you right now. So I have no idea. Well, I mean, I saw something. I'm not gonna spoil what it was. I saw something in the place where you go into. You're going into this thing, and they say it's haunted. That's what they'll tell you. And I just stood there for a second waiting for something more to happen. And that's all I'm going to tell you. And at one point, I just decided, maybe you saw the video that I posted up already, and I kind of just decided to be like, yeah, you know what? I think I'm just going to go to the next thing. But they had a really cool like beverage station based on Transformers Rise of the Beast, and they had some really cool murals on the back there. They actually had burgers from Good Burger, and the Good Burger 2 logo was on there, so that was really fun. They had wait staff kind of walking around with the burgers and stuff. And then you go into another room, which is where the bar area was. This is how they kind of transform a bar into this lodge. And they had a big back wall, and it was all Star Trek themed, and they had caricature artists that you could get a caricature done, which I thought was really neat. Now, from what I saw, they weren't exactly Star Trek themed, which I thought was interesting. And a buddy of mine said that he saw it. And, Manny, who's been on the show before, he said that, you know, he didn't see that they were Star Trek themed. And it was, you know, I thought that was kind of weird. They also had a good photo op for the Pet Sematary series that's going to be coming out. They had 1923 there. Ink Masters was a part of that as well. You get little temporary tattoos, which, you know, if I was on vacation, I probably would have done. But when you're doing press stuff and you've got like a temporary tattoo of just some random thing, yeah, it just didn't seem like the right time to do that. But there was certainly plenty of stuff going on, and they had some themed drinks at the bar, both alcoholic and non-alcoholic, I will tell you that much. So it was definitely a fun experience. It wasn't as immersive as I would have liked it to be, but it was still really neat to have these little experiences here and there. And, you know, walk away with a little something too. Like they had a little picture for the SpongeBob thing that it was a very small, like Polaroid type thing, but it was still pretty cool. And they had one for the Pet Sematary as well. So, you know, it was a neat experience overall. But I will say the one that I did after that was Anne Rice's Immortal Universe experience from AMC. And that was for Interview with the Vampire, and it was for Mayfair Witches. And what you do is you go into this place, and it transports you into the streets of New Orleans, as it were. And they talk about how, you know, there's some weird stuff going on and there's disappearances and things like that. And you go into this like speakeasy type place, and they tell you, you know, hey, drink this and it gives you eternal life, sort of thing. The drink wasn't bad. I will say that it was not bad. And I'm not a drinker. It was not an alcoholic. So I thought that was really neat. Then they actually give you a bag that tells you how to make the drink on the inside of it too, which I thought that was pretty neat. And then you go to all these, and it's kind of they'll walk you through where you're supposed to go. And you go to all these different places with these characters that are acting out this scene of these mysterious disappearances and, you know, supernatural happenings on the streets of New Orleans. And they keep telling you to be careful and be safe and stuff like that. And again, I'm not going to spoil everything, but you know, you've got some stuff that, again, you can walk away with from that. Some stuff that's very interesting and unique to that particular setting and this particular world that they're bringing you into. And there was some entertainment out there too, which I thought was pretty neat. And the posters there, I will say this, the posters at the end were just fantastic. I got a couple of them. They were kind of like themed after old movies, but with the characters from Interview with the Vampire in them. Really, really great posters. If you're a poster fan, this was the activation for you for sure. And I got to tell you, they did a very good job of making it feel immersive, making you feel like you were in another place. And that's one of the things I really love about these activations, is them trying to make it seem like you're there. And I thought that they did a pretty good job with that. So then after that, it was really late at that point. And I walked over, I'm talking, this was a pretty far walk, and it was dark. I had no idea where I was going, except I knew that I wanted to go to the Super 7 Cobra Operations Center, which was a pop-up shop, and they had, you know, the Super 7 collectibles for G.I. Joe, and it was mostly Cobra, right? And when I got there, I had to give them props. First of all, the line wasn't very long, but I waited a decent amount of time because I had no place else to be anyway. And when I was there, they had, you know, they've got somebody dressed up as Cobra Commander. They've got other Cobra cosplayers. And then they had Flint, was the only G.I. Joe character that was there in cosplay. So they were kind of like ribbing each other, giving each other a hard time. And they weren't necessarily in character the whole time, but they were certainly playing up the rivalry between G.I. Joe and Cobra. It was just really fun just being in that line, and when those guys would come through and they'd be cracking jokes with each other, they made standing in that line really easy. And then when you got inside the pop-up shop, they had so many great t-shirts and the collectibles that were in there, but they actually had like displays. And I want you to go to @MissionCollect, which is our collectible show on TikTok, and I posted the video of the displays that they had, not just displaying the action figures that they had there, both the retro style and the big Mondo, just incredible figures that they have, the Ultimates, but they actually had like a diorama type thing set up, and it was gigantic, and it had like a big battle scene between the Joes and Cobra up there. It was really good. I mean, it's for a pop-up shop, and they made everything really efficient. All you had to do is hand people a piece of paper, and they would go get you the stuff that you said you wanted. I got this Cobra shirt that said, "I want to believe," and it's got one of the Cobra ships on it that's actually shaped like a Cobra. The name of it escapes me at the moment, but it was such a great shirt. I had to get it, and I'm not usually one that's going to spend a little bit more than I should on a shirt, but I did that day. I'll tell you that right now because it was that good of a shirt. So that was a fun experience too. Again, that's something that's still open at Comic-Con, but I went to the late night opening on Wednesday night just because I wanted to get what I wanted to get, right? I got the Destro variant that I wanted. I was thinking about the Baroness, so like, nah, I'm going to get the Destro, and I got the shirt too. So that was just really fun because I just love G.I. Joe and the G.I. Joe collectibles. So you wake up on Thursday. The first thing I did didn't work out. The less I say about that, the better. I'll just say that right now. We're just going to push that one aside for now, but I also went to the Hulu Anna Mayhem preview on Thursday morning, and basically it takes you into a lot of the shows that you can see on Hulu and Fox and FX and things like that. So you're talking about like Solar Opposites and Futurama and American Dad, The Simpsons, and you know, the list goes on and on. If Archer was another one, and they had so many cool photo ops at this thing. Like, you get shrunken down in the soul. And I say shrunken down, you know, not literally, because you know that would be impossible right now. And so you get shrunken down in the world of solar opposites. You get to sit on the Simpsons couch at one point and get your picture taken. And they had so many great, they had so many great staff there taking pictures for people. You actually get to go up to the counter of Bob's Burgers and get your picture taken with that as well. And they had, you know, drinks and stuff available at that thing too. And they had something for the Great North, which I will not spoil, but it was like a kind of an interactive experience for the Great North that was pretty fun. But mostly this was about the photo ops that you could get and just kind of having fun with other fans. And I will say, if you go to @downandnerdy757 on Instagram and look at my pictures, I think that I got, you know, pretty creative with some of the pictures that I was taking. I'm just saying that I had some creative poses, and I'm curious to get your comments on that for sure. Finally, after I was done with a couple of interviews, I decided to stop over a unique invite I got from the folks at CoVCTV and laugh, and it was the Lamp for Days Roseanne experience that they had popped up. It was like a carnival. They had all these old carnival games, which was really cool. They had a Loretta Lynn impersonator singing, and if you don't know who Loretta Lynn is, kids, Google it, and you'll figure out who that is. But you might, if you're a Roseanne fan, you know what Lamp for Days is, and I got invited to kind of walk through there, and it was really fun seeing that they had a big inflatable version of the Roseanne couch there, and they had some really unique, you know, gifts and prizes that they were giving away, and they have, of course, Roseanne was on big TVs and stuff like that. That was just, it was a fun, especially for somebody who, I mean, I used to watch Roseanne all the time, so it kind of throws you back to the original series there a little bit, so it was nostalgic for me. That's one of the reasons I wanted to go. And because, you know, the carnival aspect is always fun. Plus, I needed to get out of the heat. This is the hottest it's been since I've been in San Diego. This is the hottest it's been any trip that I've been. This is the hottest it's been. But it still beats the Virginia weather. So I will say that. So that's going to do it for my experiences for the activations for Wednesday and Thursday. That doesn't mean I won't have more to talk about on next week's show. So just, you know, be ready for that. And again, follow for pictures and videos on social media. You'll be able to find those there as well. Up next, I want to get back to the interviews. Let's talk about a little bit of Loungefly with Liz DeSilva and Derek Baca. We'll do that next. I'm James Witham. This is the special Comic-Con edition of the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Yeah, brother. This is Josh Segura, and you're listening to the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
I'm
amidst all of the wonderful colors and things that is the Loungefly booth right now here at Comic-Con 2023. A couple names that you might remember from a previous episode who are the gurus of all things Loungefly, Liz DeSilva, Derek Baca. How are you both doing? Good. Welcome back.
We're still on the roller coaster. We're still on the ride. It's still fun. It's exciting every time we get to come to a con and see the fans and the excitement. We've got a lot of new stuff this time, and everyone's freaking out. Our exclusives are selling out by like noon. It's still wild.
It's definitely an amazing start to the con. Everyone is loving what we brought, and that's all we want.
Derek's lost his voice, and it's Thursday.
I know.
So we're putting that out there, we're letting you know that. But I want to ask you, you know, you were out here on preview night. I saw you. By the way, awesome Star Wars shirt for preview night. Well done. What's the excitement been like, even on a preview night? Is this the biggest crowd you've ever seen on a preview night?
100%. I think that since the obviously what's going on in the climate, the panels aren't as packed, there's just so many more people on the floor spending money. So, like, it took us by surprise completely. We sold out of stuff, like, within the first hour and a half. We're like, wait, this is the soft day of Comic-Con.
I think Stitch sold out in maybe, like, 30 minutes yesterday.
It's Stitch. Of course it sold out in 30 minutes.
But that's still really fast for a con. It was packed in here. We had people say they couldn't even get into Funkoville. So it was definitely a jam-packed preview night, for sure.
It's just exciting to see fans engaging again. And, you know, even last year it started getting there, but this is full board. Like, people are back out. They're comfortable. They're getting all the things. I mean, there's a lot of great booths here, a lot of great exclusives. And, like, I feel like the offering as a fan, even this is my 24th, I think, Comic-Con over the time. Like, the opportunities of seeing all this amazing stuff, there's just, I would be broke if I was not in the booth all day long.
Liz, we've talked about before how you guys choose what you do and what you bring to these things for this con specifically, because I feel like you guys really open things up to pretty much every fandom for this one. So what went into bringing Stitch here, bringing Chris Stanton here for this particular con?
So I think, you know, we have the approach in general that we really are trying new things. We are opening up our selection. We did McDonald's recently that was really successful, Strawberry Shortcake. We're really branching out. So we wanted to make sure that our exclusive assortment was really something for everyone. So you have Transformers in a full size. You have Jurassic Park in a neon collection, if that's your thing. You have a plush Stitch if in his sweeter vibe with Scrum. But then you also have Rocket and Groot in stylized artwork and Chris Stanton. So you really have something for everyone. And that's what we were going for.
And in addition to that, we have our first exclusive t-shirt at a con, so Jurassic Park. We have limited edition 500-piece enamel pin sets that have been blowing out. So lanyards and keychains and just expanding overall, not just mini backpacks, but again, the full-size backpack for everyone and all the little smaller accessories. It's just more for everyone.
And I think what that does too is it helps us offer different price points. So no matter what your budget is, there's a way to participate in the con in this booth.
Fashion check here, because they're both wearing the Nightmare Before Christmas shirts, which I love. Do we have more of that coming for Nightmare Before Christmas, maybe?
So this is actually a preview of what's coming in August.
Yes.
So in August, we did announce and show it on our socials. So yes, we have a
30th
anniversary collection. We have a lot of more spooky season apparel coming through. And again, the big change for Loungefly is we're a lifestyle brand, not just a mini backpack company. So apparel is a part of that. We want to gear you up head to toe and put apparel that actually matches the bags. That's always the hardest thing, because our bags are crazy sometimes, and how do you match it? But we want to give you that opportunity too.
I think this Halloween season we have more apparel than ever before. It's going to be our biggest season for apparel.
And I want you guys to reiterate something we had from our last conversation, just because somebody didn't see it. This is apparel that pretty much whatever size you are, you guys are kind of catering to that a little bit, yes?
Yes, we are very size inclusive, not just in apparel, but in our bags. So we have done a lot of work adjusting strap sizes to make sure that our bags are truly for everyone. But our apparel, whether it's Stitch Up by Loungefly, which are more tailored pieces, go from small to 4X, or our unisex hoodies, tees, button-ups, those are, you know, they're a looser fit unisex sizing, but go still through small through 3X. So we really want to make sure that everyone can enjoy what we're making.
And the 3X is a real 3X.
Oh, yeah.
That's good to know.
I'm a real 3X. I have a belly. It's real. And it does. I'm actually the fit model for the big size because I am a large mammal. So it is. It's not like slim fit at all.
He's working the crowd so much, though, he's going to be a 2X by the time the con's over.
That's
so
true, that's true.
We're just going to have to be ready for that, Derek.
I can only hope for that.
Is there anything, as you're meeting more fans this year, is there anything that kind of surprised you that sold a little bit better or a little bit quicker than you thought it would? Obviously, people love everything, but was there anything you went, whoa, that's already gone?
No, the full-size Transformers backpack.
It's
$125, but it's a full-size. And we weren't sure, but the expansion of the brand over the past 4 or 5 years, where I would say that we were mostly known as a ladies' handbag kind of company, it's across the board with Funko, Mondo, the whole Funko family. A lot of guys and a lot of women too. Like, I'm not a mini backpack person. I love this option. It's selling out too fast. Like,
yeah, the fact that our full-size Soundwave sold out first really speaks volumes to where we're going as a brand and what we want to continue to offer.
So this means more full-size, yes, because I'm a full-size guy.
2024, you will be showered in
24 is the year
inclusivity
for new silhouettes, larger silhouettes, and more functional silhouettes.
So you're saying I'm upgrading my bag for Comic-Con next
yes.
year?
Yes. Oh,
okay.
We will have
good to know. Good to know for sure. Is there anything that you're still getting a lot of requests for from fans that they're maybe not seeing from Loungefowl? Like maybe specific fandoms or something like
that? There is one.
You want
fandom
more for this?
We consistently hear an ask for Rainbow Bright.
That is not the name I would have expected.
You know why? Because we launched Strawberry Shortcake this year, did amazing. We've done really well with My Little Pony. So all of these Popples, all these 80s vintage toys, we have not done Rainbow Bright. And we consistently hear from fans, Rainbow Bright.
The second you guys put out that Strawberry Shortcake, you set yourself up.
We did.
That's exactly what happened.
We did.
Is what happened there. I know that I asked you guys this the last time I talked to you, but it's Comic-Con, so I'm going to ask you again. All the exclusives that you've got this year, you can grab one for yourself. Which one is it, Liz?
I'm Jurassic Park. I love the colors. It's a fresh take. I love Jurassic Park, but all of our bags have been very traditional to the original movie color scheme. I love a neon summer take on a classic.
I know Derek's got his eye on something.
I'm Soundwave. Transformers.
Oh, you picked the one I would have picked.
Of course. It's amazing. It's kind of like my baby. I was so involved in, like, the team did a great job. I mean, it's so exciting to see it sell out.
Well, it's amazing to see all the great stuff that they have at the booth this year. If you're at Comic-Con, obviously come by and see them, but make sure you follow them on social media and all that other stuff. Because, I mean, they're going to have a lot of stuff planned beyond Comic-Con for sure.
We're not stopping.
No, they're never going to stop, ever. Liz, Derek, thank you guys both so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you for always
taking time to talk about Loungefly.
And I'm telling you right now, I got an up-close look at that Soundwave bag that Derek was talking about, and I have no words for it. Just, I love the selective expansion that Loungefly has done, and they don't just expand for the sake of expanding, like they were saying. They actually put stuff out very strategically, and they put it out not just very timely, but because this is what fans want. So, I mean, if you want Rainbow Bright, they're probably going to make it happen sooner rather than later. I'm just saying that right now, and they are just so fun to chat with, and their enthusiasm's off the charts. So it's just so easy to support Loungefly when you've got Derek and Liz that are a part of this thing, because it's not just because the products are fun, but because they're just great people as well, and that certainly helps. Again, thanks to Liz and Derek and the wonderful people at Loungefly for letting me have that conversation on the show floor at Comic-Con this year. What up next? Let's go a little bit down the road here and talk about Mondo. I'm going to talk to Hector and Peter about everything that's going on there next on the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
This is comic book writer and co-creator of Deadpool, Fabian Nicieza, and you're listening to the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
I'm sitting at the Mondo booth at San Diego Comic-Con 2023. This, as far as I'm concerned, is the place to be because there's so many amazing things that they've got going on. I've got Peter and Hector, the gurus behind it all. Gentlemen, how you doing?
Great. Happy to be here.
Awesome. Thank you for having us.
So I was just talking to somebody outside of your booth, guys, and I was talking about how with Mondo, you really get your money's worth in pretty much everything that you get, because the posters are the size of my wife. I love them. They're incredible. Talk about what's exciting as far as posters this year. I know you've got some Spider-Man 2099 stuff. What other some other exciting stuff you've got?
Well, we launched yesterday with two great reproductions. So we had X-Men number 2 by Jim Lee, Spider-Man 2099 number 1, and that's one of the things we do in posters is these reproductions that give you that great comic art that you loved, reading, years ago. and today and have it now blown up to a giant size, which really lets you appreciate it on a different level. That was Wednesday, and now every day going forward in the con, we're dropping brand new original prints, great pairings with artists like Tomer Hanuka, Tom Whalen, and myself, Attack Peter, dropping a print, and super, super great stuff. We got Cowboy Bebop, we got Spider-Man, it's just Moon Knight by Greg Ruth. So the story of Mondo Posters is finding that amazing artist whose work you love, pairing them with an IP that excites us and the artist, and bringing that pairing to the fans. That's the secret sauce.
Hector, is it just go big or go home for Mondo at everything you do? Is that just kind of you guys' motto around here?
Yeah, we try. Yeah, I mean, especially in toys and collectibles, you know, we just love doing some, you know, figures that are going to wow people, and that's what we did last year when we were here. We had Battle Cat from showing off Battle Cat, which was people were just went crazy over. This year we have Bambat 1/6 scale, first time ever. I think the only one, the first six time.
Probably the last
scale.
One, too.
Probably the last one.
No one's going to be as crazy as we are with that.
Exactly. Over a 2-foot wingspan, so yeah. We're pretty stoked. Yeah.
Talk about that vinyl line for a second, because it's not just the Man Bat. I'm looking at that Magneto, and first time I saw it, I was like, what? This might be the most incredible Magneto that I've ever seen. So talk about the detail that went into that.
So with our 1/6 scale figure line, and X-Men in particular, it's based off the show, right? So the X-Men the Animated Series, and we just wanted to recapture that look that was so iconic from that show. So the cel shading, the art style, we just wanted to bring that to life in a figure that's never been done before. Honestly, we're the first company to do at the time X-Men the Animated Series anything. And so launching that way back when with a Wolverine meme figure from a couple Comic-Cons ago. So we've had a tradition to try to release a new X-Men figure every year, and this year we have Logan, which is, you know, thank you.
We're checking out the Weapon. You'll see the video if you go to YouTube and stuff like that.
So, you know, it's such an iconic look from that show where, you know, he's wearing the jacket, he's got the flannel, and so we thought it'd be awesome to bring him to Comic-Con this year as an exclusive.
And the Magneto specifically is our Uncanny Edition, so we released one that's more on model for the cartoon with the cel shading, and this one's more an homage to the comics. You know, we got the blacked out face, you got the metallic paints and the gauntlets and the helmet, so it's revisiting that character in all the different ways that you loved him growing up.
Speaking of memes, and I love that you guys did this one specifically, because you guys are easily my go-to for Masters of the Universe, because I just don't think anybody does it better. Let's talk about the He-Man meme for a second, the Prince Adam meme, because that one is off the charts, man. I love that you guys did that.
Yeah, I mean, Hector has done an amazing job with Masters of the Universe, finding this perfect mix of loyalty to the original spirit of the characters, but also amping it up, putting an official Mondo twist on things, you know, just finding detail, creating opportunities to be excited about the armor and the... It's just amazing. So with Prince Adam, yeah, of course, we love the humor around it too. And our first image that we released was celebrating that meme. A subtle nod, but one nonetheless.
Yeah, we still took the figure seriously in the sense of like we put all the detail and all the care.
You did that.
Yeah, that we would normally do for any of our releases, but we had to include it. And also even like little nods to the original figure by having the pink sword as opposed to just a silver sword, right? Or even a nod to the mini comics by having the Masks of Power come with him. Those are just little nods and little things that we love to do with all of our MOTU figures and just like really hit that fan base with like, these are things that you grew up with, things that you're gonna remember. And so, yeah, but the meme face, it had to be included. There was no question about it.
Absolutely. And another thing I love about you guys, and I wanted to ask you about this to kind of confirm this for me, is like, you guys don't release a ton at a time. You do everything in small batches. Does it feel like quality over quantity for you guys? Obviously, you guys want a ton of figures and stuff out there, but do you have that quality over quantity approach?
Of course, yeah. We always want our figures to, you know, we spend so much time in the pre-production aspect for every single thing. Even if it's a simple, more, you know, artist-driven soft vinyl, it still has so much detail and so much love and care. So yeah, there is a part of that, but there also is another part where we do recognize that the fans want these, so we do timed editions where we give fans a slot or time period to be able to purchase their figure, and if they get it, that's awesome. And if not, you know, we still keep that exclusivity, because after that we're never re-releasing that figure, I mean in that version, ever again. So a timed edition is like, that's your one chance to get it. in this iteration, and that's about it. And then with our Shelf Vinyl, a little bit different approach. We just kind of scatter different colors.
And if you're a collector, that should speak to you on a whole other level, for sure. I also want to talk about the records for a second, the vinyl records, because I got my Cobra Kai last year.
Awesome.
Super excited about it. What made you guys decide it was time to kind of blend that musical aspect and the entertainment aspect as well, and even the comic aspect? Because, you know, fans do love the soundtracks.
Yeah, I mean, with the soundtracks are such a pillar of Mondo, right? It's about as important to the fan base as our posters, as everything. So, I mean, with records in general, I think it's just that, again, that same approach of, like, if we're fans of it, we're going to put it out. And that's mainly, like, our big approach to it.
No doubt. So, as I kind of scan my eyes through all this amazing stuff right now, you've got so much great stuff that's specifically for the show this year. If I could tell you, grab your favorite right now, what are you grabbing?
Favorite exclusive?
Yeah, favorite exclusive. What are you grabbing, Hector? Come on.
What am I grabbing? Ah, that's a tough one.
He's looking around the room, trying not to pick one of his babies.
Yeah, because I mean, I can be biased and be like, oh, for the toys, I'll pick one for every department. How about that?
Okay, that's
fair. So for toys, I think this is my favorite. It's going to be the Biollante. This is a clear, glitter, soft vinyl blank that is like pretty just covered in glitter. It's one of my favorite releases. It's such a cool piece to have, and we only have a small amount here at the show, so this is super rare, very very rare for the whole toys and collectibles department. And then I would say for the posters, this definitely has to be the Spider-Man 2099. I think it's one of my, like, an amazing cover. I'm so stoked that team decided to repro that cover. It's amazing. And then for the vinyl records, I think it's probably gonna be Ted Lasso. It came out amazing.
Oh, everybody loves that one. Okay, Peter, I just asked Hector, you can pick out a favorite of the exclusives this year. What are you grabbing?
Oh my God, Man-Bat, and I'm taking that Man-Bat with that massive over 2 foot wingspan and wiping my shelf clear of all the other toys just to make space for its majesty and its glory. In terms of the records, that Wall-E soundtrack that's literally only on Eco Vinyl. We're only doing that one variant on Eco Vinyl because it makes sense for the property. And I love Wall-E, that soundtrack's incredible. And then posters, God, don't make me choose between my children. If I choose between from the reproductions that we've done, it's that Jim Lee X-Men number 2 with Magneto standing over, strangling Xavier. And if I choose from one of the artist's editions, the online variant that we're doing with Florian Bergmer for Destroy All Monsters is a masterpiece. And it's like probably his best poster that I've ever seen. And I can't wait to own both variants because they're that good.
That's incredible. Before I let you guys go, those 6-scale figures are I think, really taking off for you guys. Is there a wish list, something you really want to do in the future that might be coming at some point?
Well, I'll tell you what I want to do before I die is 1/6-scale. This is not saying that we're doing this. 1/6-scale comic accurate Hellboy figures.
Yes.
That's me as Peter, as an individual. I would kill to do that. There's lots of stuff I want to do, but if I only ever get that, I'd be happy.
Hector's got a glint in his eye. He's got to have something.
We have a lot of stuff in the works, but, and I'm not saying, you know, this is going to, me personally as a fan, I want to see Thundercats. I want to do, you know, we want to, you know, do give Thundercats the Mochu treatment where we stay true to the original characters, but we update the designs, we add more detail, we add nods to the episodes or whatever. So, yeah, that would be mine.
Oh, one more. Can I do one more?
Of course you can do one more.
Ninja Turtles, dude.
Yes!
If we could give Ninja Turtles the same treatment that we give Masters, which is, you know the characters when you see them, they're loyal with all the different details and Easter eggs, but they're created by Mondo and they feel original and, you know, exclusive to Mondo. That's a dream.
See, this is where you go to social media and find Mondo and tell them that these are all of the things that you want.
You can go talk to the Nickelodeon and tell them, like, we're down. We're ready to go.
Oh, so that's where it's at. Okay, so we'll bug...
Don't tell anybody anything.
We will bug them, but they've already got so much great stuff that you need to check out. Hector, Peter, guys, thank you so much both for your time.
I really appreciate it.
We
love it.
And when I tell you that Mondo has some of the most beautiful 6-scale figures I've ever seen, I mean Mondo has some of the most beautiful 6-scale figures I've ever seen. And these Batman figures that they had up there, the new ones from Phantasm and Batman the Animated Series, are going to blow your freaking mind if you haven't seen them already. And these posters, man, you want a giant poster of comic art that you really already love in the first place. Mondo is your go-to, and it's really... not even close. There's no close second. I think it's unparalleled. It's just a fun brand. And they just have so much detail that goes into this and so much love, and it really shows when you're walking through there and seeing these exclusives. So if you're already at Comic-Con, make sure you stop by Mondo and pick yourself something up. You will not be sorry that you did. It's going to be the star of your shelf for sure. Again, thanks to Peter and Hector for joining me to talk about Mondo a little bit this week. Up next, going to talk about collectibles one more time because famed Ninja Turtles artist Mateus Santoloco joined me at the Loyal Subjects booth for a quick chat about some of the exclusives that they have there at booth number 2544. I'll talk about that next. I'm James Witham. This is the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
Hi, this is Kevin Eastman, co-creator of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and you're listening to me on the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
I'm at the Loyal Subjects booth here at Comic-Con. Of course, they've got so many great Ninja Turtles things this year, and I just happened to run into the artist himself. You might know him from IDW. He did the line for Loyal Subjects as well. Mateus, and Mateus, say your last name for me one more time.
Santoloco.
Santoloco. See, I'm going to practice that in the mirror when I get back to the hotel. But Mateus, obviously your artwork's been incredible on this Turtles run. Talk about the collaboration here with Loyal Subjects a little bit.
Oh man, it has been great since day one. They already like were developing the toys, but they called me in and told me the toys would be based on my drawings. So I did some consulting for them to help to fine-tune the sculpts. And also did a custom artwork for the packaging, and it has been a great experience so far. You know, I've been working with the Turtles since 2011, and I've been craving to have some toys based on my drawings since then. So I'm super super excited about that.
There's got to be a cool factor to that, right?
Yeah, of course. I guess everyone that works with comics and with these iconic characters hope to someday see their drawings turn into toys and action figures. You know.
So, Mateus, obviously when you're working with Turtles, you know, it's a fandom that's near and dear to all of our hearts, I think, at this point. What's something when you were consulting with them, you're like, you got to make sure we get this right for the fans?
Oh, well, especially the proportion between the Turtles, since I try to draw them each with different body types and facial features different from each other, also to like to mirror their personalities and all that. So that's one of the aspects I was really like focused on to get the proportion between them and the faces like accurate looking like my style, you know.
Is there a particular turtle that's more fun to draw than some others? Because I mean, everybody's got a favorite, I think. But yeah. Is there any that's more fun to draw than others?
It depends. It depends on the story I'm working, I guess. More lighthearted stories. Mike is always fun to draw, and action things, I think. Raphael, for obvious reasons, but I love them all. You know, people often ask me which one is my favorite, and I don't have one because it depends on the vibe of the story you're telling. So yeah, they all got to shine in their own moment. You know,
that's very cool. And of course, you're going to be able to meet fans here at the Loyal Subjects booth. What do fans say to you about your work on Turtles?
Yeah, people usually like praise my work about. Especially this characteristic of the turtles being different from each other, that's one thing. And I don't know, man, that's always like weird to talk about yourself.
Oh, trust me, I know. I talk about people like you all the time. Myself, not so much. Mateus, thank you so much, man, for your time, and enjoy the con.
Oh, thank you.
And first of all, I have to say, I kind of put Mateus on the spot there. So he was a good sport for chatting with me for a few minutes. I just love his art on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and to see that come to life in these figures from Loyal Subjects, who already have a whole bunch of amazing turtle stuff. It just adds to it. Plus, they have the Toka and Rezar there. They have that glow-in-the-dark Shredder that's there at the booth. So if you are at Comic-Con, then you need to stop by booth number 2544 and get some of these exclusives from the Loyal Subjects, because they are, if you're a Turtles fan, this is something you need to have, especially if you love Mateus's run in the comics. And thank Mateus so much once again for joining me to chat at the Loyal Subjects booth this week. Up next, there's still a little bit of nerd news to talk about from the first couple of days of Comic-Con, and I'll get into some of that next on the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
This is Dave Gastmalchin, creator of Count Crowley, Reluctant Midnight Monster Hunter. You are listening to the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
It might be only the Wednesday and Thursday edition, but it is time for nerd news, Comic-Con style. And there were some interesting things to come out of these first couple of days, especially Thursday, because, you know, preview night, nobody's really dropping any news, but I wanted to start with an announcement from DC, who's teaming up with Legendary to do Justice League versus Godzilla versus Kong. That's right. They're going to combine those worlds into one big comic event that's going to be written by Brian Bucciolato, who's a former guest on the show. You've also got Christian Ducey, who I hope I'm saying that right. And we have colorist Louis Guerrero Luis Guerrero that's going to be involved in this as well. And the splash art page that they sent out, the artwork by Drew Johnson for the cover, which is definitely going to be a wraparound cover from what I'm looking at right now, just shows this just massive Godzilla and Kong and members of the Justice League that are up there as well. Now, some of these details aren't going to come out until Friday, so I might have to talk about this again on next week's show. But basically, the gist that was sent out by DC was that, you know, this was a battle between the Justice League and the Legion of Doom when things started off, and then a wall between worlds is breached, and now you've got Godzilla, Kong, and the MonsterVerse emerging into DC's Earth. So there's going to be a lot of uncertainty there once that comes in. And I'm looking at more of these art pages now, and it just looks so incredible and clean. And you get to see not just Justice League members, but like I said, Legion of Doom members in this as well. From what I'm seeing, I mean, I've seen Captain Cold in here. I saw Green Lantern. I saw Supergirl, Flash. I mean, you name it. It seems like there's going to be, you know, certainly an extended Justice League in this thing. Now, this is something that, of course, you know, Warner Brothers has the Legendary properties that they've put out before with, you know, the Godzilla movies and the Kong movies and things like that. So this isn't very far-fetched. And to do this in comics where you can kind of, you know, the sky's the limit for what you can do in comics because there's so many great artists and there's certainly great artists attached to this book. So this, to me, seems like an idea that I'm kind of surprised they haven't done already. Like, DC's certainly done plenty of really good crossover books with other publishers and stuff like that. You know, like we had the Green Lantern Star Trek crossover not too long ago. That's just the first one that popped into my head. So, and this is not out of the realm of possibility of DC doing something like this. And this is just something creative and fun that you can get excited about. And this is one of those like Comic-Con moment type announcements. So this is what happens when you bring DC back to the floor, right? Stuff like this happens. Although I will say, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles has had a huge spotlight at this year's show, not just because of the Hall H panel for Mutant Mayhem, which will be out on August the 2nd, and yeah, they released a new clip from the movie that was, and it just looks fun. I just become more and more convinced of how fun this movie is going to be. But the big news, I think, was Nickelodeon announcing during that Hall H panel that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the original animated series from 1987, they've secured the global rights to that series. Now, it's going to come to digital later this year and then to Nickelodeon-branded channels after that. And because these are global rights, this will expand internationally out as well. So if you've been international, you've been waiting for the chance to somehow see or acquire or buy the Ninja Turtles animated series of old that we love, looks like your chance is going to be coming soon. Plus, to me, and this wasn't part of the announcement, but I thought the timing was interesting. To me, it seems like this could open the door for new projects based on that original series. Not necessarily maybe a continuation from where it left off, but something new in some capacity. Now, I know we've seen that art style and those characters in other versions of Ninja Turtles before, but this is different. This is having the rights, which means you've got it all at this point, right? So to me, it seems like you do this, A, because it's smart, because you want to be able to, you know, show the series on Nickelodeon and on Nickelodeon-branded channels and on, you know, maybe Paramount Plus as well at some point. That was, again, not part of the announcement. This is just where my head's at. But it just seems like you don't do this unless you've got a plan to do something more. So I'm keeping my eyes on this for sure to see what's going to happen with this. But I mean, at the end of the day, am I happy that it's going to be easier for me to show my kids the original Ninja Turtles series that made me fall in love with the Turtles? Absolutely. So, I mean, this is a win for me as a parent. So I'll go ahead and take that win. Crunchyroll actually had some big announcements. You know, the excitement is building for the One Piece live action adaptation that's on Netflix. But no. We're going to talk about anime this time because it's Crunchyroll, who announced also at Comic-Con that they are bringing 3 One Piece movies to the service on July the 27th. So we've got One Piece Film Gold, also One Piece Stampede, and One Piece Film Red, which are big, big One Piece movies that, you know, maybe you've been waiting for. Also, the part of the original anime series, the English dub of that, came out on July 5th, but the rest of it from 977 to 988 is going to be coming out on July the 25th, if you've been waiting for that. Beyond the One Piece stuff, and they had some really cool One Piece displays on the show floor this year, so I thought that was really neat. But we've also got a One Punch Man online game that's going to be debuting here soon. They're actually demoing it on the show floor. If you've got a chance to go down there yet, or if you haven't, you know, you've still got time to be able to do that. And they've also announced a couple of new anime series that's going to be coming, and I'll tell you a little bit about each one of them. So Fluffy Paradise is going to be coming in January of 2024. That's the date that they have right now anyway. And Midori is a young woman who dies at the age of 27 and is reincarnated by a god who sort of tasks her to tell him if humans should continue existing in the world that she's been brought back into, which I think is a really interesting concept. And then you have Shy, which comes out in October of this year, and it's a show about all war has ended on Earth, has ceased, and heroes kind of emerge to try and help maintain this newfound peace that the world has had. So I think that's super interesting. I think the concept of that possibly being a thing is really, really interesting. So I love what Crunchyroll is doing right now. I love that this was an opportunity this year for them to make a big splash, and I think that they certainly did that. Finally, there was so much around Comic-Con about what is Project K, this new sci-fi movie from India. What is this thing? We finally found out that is, and I'm going to try and pronounce this as best as I can, Kalki 2898 AD is the name of the movie that's going to be coming out on 2024. Now, I will say that I am very ignorant in the stars of Indian cinema, so I certainly don't know a whole lot about that. But what I can tell you is when I'm watching this trailer that finally got released, which apparently has some of the biggest stars in India and also a big, big time director as well. So as I'm looking at this first trailer for this thing, it really to me struck me as kind of a India version of Dune with some other sci-fi elements mixed in. I got big Dune vibes. It was almost like a cross between Dune and 300, it almost seemed like, in a weird way, more aesthetically like 300 than story-wise. I will say that, but it's Nag Ashwin Reddy who is the director of this movie. And just from what I actually heard somebody talking in one of the press rooms that I was in, and people found that the stars of this movie, which are again apparently very popular, and the director were out, you know, amongst the fans, you know, getting to the convention center, and people were just darting into the traffic just to try and get a glimpse of these stars. And it's not because Hollywood is not really having a presence at Comic-Con. Apparently these stars of this upcoming movie are just that huge for fans in India and international fans. And it's like, you know, what are we missing? And I think that's kind of the buzz I've got for this thing right now. Like, what am I missing? What are we missing? How incredible is this really going to be? So I'm going to keep my eyes open for this thing when it comes out in 2024, which is, you know, that's when it's supposed to be coming out right now. But again, there's, you know, the release dates seem like they're going to be pretty fluid right now. Although this is India cinema, it's, I don't know how much it gets affected about what happens here in the U.S. I don't think at all. So I'm curious to see how much of a buzz this is going to get over in the States. But internationally, already pretty huge, it seems like. That's going to do it for this week's edition of the Down and Nerdy Podcast. Again, thanks for listening to part one of the Comic-Con show. Part two going to come out next week, which is going to be my big review of the show overall. But this is just kind of my initial impression of things, you know, from Wednesday and Thursday. But still, I mean, some great stuff. And thanks to my amazing guests for joining me this week. It was so nice to get out, talk to people in person, out on the show floor. It's always fun to be able to do that. Make sure you're following and subscribing wherever you get your podcasts, whether it be on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get them. Make sure you're subscribing to the show, which really, really helps out a ton. You can always find everything at downandnerdypodcast.com as well. Follow at downandnerdy757 on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads. Also at downandnerdypod on TikTok and at downandnerdy on Facebook, because there's always some fun stuff going on there. And that's where the pictures and videos and stuff are going to hit first from Comic-Con. So the next couple of days, if you're listening to this, it's still Comic-Con. Make sure you follow me, because I've got some really fun stuff to share with you there. So I'm going to go back to my work at Comic-Con here to bring you some more great stuff this week. But remember, you never have to apologize for being a nerd, not just at Comic-Con. So let your fan flag fly. Be good to your fellow nerds.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts, with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.